Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on FFC. It is Football Full Circle here on the Sports Grid Radio Network and Sirius XM Channel 159. And it feels like football, Joe, because today starts Hard Knocks. That's the mastermind of the pigskin, Joe Lisi. I am Ben Stevens. It's a small wrinkle in the calendar, Joe, but during these summer months, when you get the Hard Knocks premiere, it means football is right around the corner. Preseason games pick up once again for the entire NFL all around the league on Thursday. And really, Hard Knocks, Joe, means that football is very, very close.
Yes, and all eyes will be on Aaron Rodgers and the New York Jets. A lot of pressure and a lot of optimism surrounding this team right now. Fans from the Jets and obviously just across the NFL get a glimpse into Aaron Rodgers and potentially the locker room this year. Will it have a benefit, much like the success of the Detroit Lions last year and obviously on knocking on the door for a potential playoff appearance, knock off Aaron Rodgers last year? They had great success in year number one, but what does that mean right now for the New York Jets this year, right? There is no margin of error, and what I mean by that is it's do or die. You didn't bring Aaron Rodgers into town to just limp for a 7-10 record overall. You brought him in to make the playoffs and, more importantly, a Super Bowl.
Absolutely so, Joe. It's not just snapping the postseason drought that now extends to 12 years since 2010 for the New York Jets, the longest active playoff drought in the National Football League. It's about winning postseason meaningful games and, of course, contending for a Lombardi Trophy. Joe, Aaron Rodgers was on the sidelines of the Hall of Fame game last Thursday. He was calling some plays for Zach Wilson. Reportedly, we will see that scene in Hard Knocks as they've already played a preseason game here to start off this new season. Joe, do you think that you will see or hear anything throughout Hard Knocks that will change your evaluation of Aaron Rodgers' inaugural year in New York?
No. I think anything that you see on the screen this year is for show in terms of Aaron Rodgers. And the reason why I said that is because of the press conference a few days ago where he said, you know, a lot of pundits and analysts thought I couldn't handle, obviously, the New York media. Anybody can handle the New York media in the offseason, right? You haven't played any type of games. The New York media, it gets its name and recognition and, I want to say, street credit due to the regular season. It's what you do when adversity hits and how you handle that type of perspective, because it's much different than the small market of Green Bay where he was looked at as a savior and a god. Now in New York, and that's why many athletes can no longer play in this type of city, because it's go big or go home. I mean, the bar is set for the New York Jets. You mentioned the playoff drought. Last time they got to an AFC championship was back with Bill Parcells and Vinny Testaverde back in the day. I mean, this is what it's all about right now. I mean, they need to step up and showcase what they have. And until they do that, I can't buy in to say that Aaron Rodgers solely is going to change the whole landscape and mindset of a losing organization this year.
9.5, the win total for the New York Jets. Their odds to make the postseason -134. The Jets are favored to do so. They are favored slightly to be a double-digit win football team. And Joe, that might be the benchmark in the AFC. That is where things stand in this conference at this moment. That is what is expected of the New York Jets. The second best price for this team to win their division in the AFC East. It is +250. Joe, some interesting news around the National Football League as well, as the training camp portion of our schedule continues on. Of course, one of the biggest hirings this offseason was Eric Bieniemy to the Washington Commanders. And what's interesting about that, Joe, is of course Bieniemy takes all of the pedigree he has earned as one of the best offensive minds in the sport as the OC for Kansas City. And yet there were some interesting comments made by Ron Rivera, of course, who is the head coach of Washington, about some players on the Commanders not really adapting all that well to Eric Bieniemy's intensity. Ron Rivera saying, quote, "One of the biggest things is I had a number of guys come to me and say, hey, just go talk to him. I said, understand what he's trying to get across to you. I think as they go and they talk and they listen to him, it's been enlightening for a lot of these guys. I mean, it's a whole different approach." And he went on to further say this: "Eric has an approach, and it's the way he does things, and it's not going to change because he believes in it. Jack, as in Jack Del Rio, has his approach. Having been a head coach, I think Jack has a tendency to try to figure guys out a little bit more as opposed to, hey, this is it. This is the way it's going to be," that type of stuff. Eric hasn't had that experience yet. Interesting comments, Joe. For the new prime acquisition this offseason, Eric Bieniemy is the offensive coordinator, that there's been some concern in Washington about the way that he speaks and delivers all of the offensive schemes he needs to institute.
Yeah, it is interesting, and I'm curious to see how this situation plays out. Now, Eric Bieniemy, as a player in Colorado, was one of the all-time leading rushers for Colorado. But let's not forget, he was the former running backs coach for Minnesota. He's a fiery guy as a player, and now as a coach, this is not a marriage made in heaven for the Washington Commanders right now.
You would think right now, Joe, at this point of the preseason training camp, what's the point of Ron Rivera airing this out to the media? What benefit does that do either his players that are concerned or his newly hired offensive coordinator? Not a good start in Washington, although the season's not all that optimistic either. More on Football Full Circle up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We are back here on FFC. It is Football Full Circle, all a part of the Sports Grid Radio Network. Some news and notes around the National Football League on a big day in football. Hard Knocks premieres tonight. Obviously, the story of the New York Jets this preseason and training camp. We had the words, Joe, that we just shared coming up to the break that Ron Rivera said his players were, quote, "a little concerned about new offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy riding them too hard and installing his new offense in Washington." Joe, I don't really get it. Eric Bieniemy has earned the benefit of the doubt. I think if you're a player in Washington, that regardless of his intensity and the practice of how things are put in place, maybe you would take a step back and realize that Bieniemy is a two-time Super Bowl champion as the offensive coordinator, or at least a part of the offensive staff with Kansas City, knowing he's worked with Patrick Mahomes, that would only be a highlight. But I think even more than that, Joe, what's concerning is Ron Rivera sharing this. There wasn't really a need to go into the struggles having this new offensive system. It wasn't the idea of Eric Bieniemy being a hard you-know-what when it comes to how he installs his offense. Very interesting development in what could be a very pivotal season for Ron Rivera's career as the head coach in Washington.
Yeah, pivotal, and that's a great word because I agree with you 100%. And, you know, we saw Ron Rivera have this type of situation with the Carson Wentz dilemma last year. Remember when they were talking about, you know, who wanted Carson Wentz, and Ron Rivera came out and said it was me. I was the guy that, you know, broke down the game film, and it's, you know, he had to do damage control with that type of situation as well. And I'll just say this, you know, from the X's and O's standpoint, Ron Rivera, since winning the division a few years years ago when they limped to a 7-9 record and won it by default, I want to say, you know, has regressed as a team. Now, you know, do you want to put the blame on the situation with Daniel Snyder? That's in the back seat. Now there's optimism, and now it seems like he's setting up this team again for an excuse of not to perform. And Eric Bieniemy is a high-intensity guy. You know, outside of working with winners and a two-time Super Bowl champ, he worked with the former, you know, leading rusher of the NFL back in the day, Adrian Peterson. That was a blue-collar guy as well. Has the leg changed? Yes. It's gotten softer, I want to say, and more, you know, player-sensitive in terms of pushing them through practices. But at the end of the day, it's still football. And that has been the mindset or the lack of mindset from Washington under Ron Rivera. They win games they're not supposed to and lose games that they should dominate. And the inconsistency has been there from day number one. And I got to be honest with you, they're set at the worst odds in the NFC East because the continuity is not there under his tutelage. I think he's a terrible head coach, Ben. Terrible.
Right now, the Commanders, Joe, have a win total of 6.5. The under has the juice at -128. It is the third worst win total when you take into actual number of expected wins and where the juice resides in the National Football League. Only the Cardinals and the Buccaneers have a worse win total at 6.5, where the under has more juice than that of the over. The Texans also tied with the Buccaneers, for that second worst win total, which means that the Commanders still in the bottom five of the National Football League, which, Joe, is not a good sign, right? They're going with Sam Howell. Both you and I thought Washington could have been in the running for making a move at a quarterback in the QB-rich 2023 NFL draft. They do not. They go with their fifth-round selection from 2 years ago in 2022. Eric Bieniemy was a good hire. It's unfortunate that Bieniemy has to go somewhere else to prove his pedigree as an offensive mind in the hopes of one day maybe, just ever so possibly, securing a head coach spot in the NFL. But Joe, the odds aren't, you aren't, I'm not optimistic for the Commanders in 2023.
No, I'm not either. I mean, you brought in Eric Bieniemy as well because there's no offensive identity. I mean, they have great pieces in place. Brian Robinson, the running back, Terry McLaurin, right? But they don't have an offensive identity. Are they a team that throws it 40 to 50 times a game like Kansas City back in the day? Or are they a ground and pound type of offense? Certainly, they need more production out of the quarterback position. They didn't get it last year. They had glimpses of that with Taylor Heinicke. And now it falls on Sam Howell. I don't know what they're going to do right now. But the fact that he came out and said, you know what, Jacoby Brissett had a good camp. I mean, what is that all about? I mean, I just don't get it.
Yeah, I don't really understand it either. Jacoby Brissett is a veteran. You would think to help guide Sam Howell along. You've invested in him. He started the regular season finale, that wild upset over the Cowboys, who played their entire starters virtually the entirety of that game. And yet, there's some interesting words coming out of Washington right now. The Commanders open up their preseason Friday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on the road in Cleveland. The Browns are already a perfect 1-0 to start this preseason, a three-point favorite at home against Washington on Friday. Earlier on Friday, Joe, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers open up their preseason as a slight one-point favorite at home against the Steelers. It will be interesting to see which quarterback gets the start and how many quarterbacks play in Tampa. We got the news today, Joe. The depth chart has been officially released for the Buccaneers, and at the starting quarterback, or at least at the quarterback slot in the depth chart for the starter, there's a Baker Mayfield or Kyle Trask, which Adam Schefter took a little heat for because he said, I've never seen an or on a depth chart. Joe, if you see multiple ors on a depth chart in college football, it really should not be all that shocking. We're college football guys. We know ors are just a part of the lingo. Or meaning we haven't really decided on a clear-cut frontrunner to be our starting quarterback. So, Joe, it seems the Buccaneers are also confused with who is going to enter this 2023 regular season as the starter at QB.
Yeah, they better figure it out. Otherwise, they're going to need it in order to sustain, the ship, right? Right now, and row the boat, because I think it should be Kyle Trask. Again, I know you brought in Baker Mayfield. I don't think Kyle Trask was given an opportunity to compete and be that number two guy when Tom Brady was there. He was a rookie and obviously understands the playbook. But now, obviously, with Todd Bowles at the helm, you have to understand what you have in Kyle Trask. Let's not forget, with him and Mac Jones dueling out a couple of years ago in the SEC championship game, Kyle Trask was a Heisman front runner with Mac Jones before Devontae Smith stole it that year. He threw 40-plus touchdowns to Kyle Pitts in his last year in Florida. They have the ability to stretch the field, I believe, with Kyle Trask more so than with Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield, we know what we have in terms of that. He's a pedestrian, good backup quarterback right now. I don't think he's a starter in this league. I think you get more wins if you allow Kyle Trask to utilize that offense and throw it 30 to 40 times per game. But again, what is the mindset and what is the philosophy of Tampa right now? Are they going to air it out just the way they did under Brady? Or does Todd Bowles want a more methodical attack? That could determine who starts week number one.
The quarterback is going to be in a very important piece, Joe, of course, in Tampa Bay, because if you look at Tom Brady the last few years, his final 2 years as the QB in Tampa, the Bucs threw the football more than any other team in the National Football League, greater than a 68% clip a year ago. And then in 2021, they led the NFL as well at 67.5% of their plays coming through the air. Is it an entire change of the offensive scheme and how do Baker Mayfield or Kyle Trask orchestrate that offense? I think Baker, Joe, will start week number one of the regular season when the Buccaneers open up their 2023 campaign on the road in Minnesota as a near touchdown underdog, getting 6.5 points. I do not believe Baker Mayfield ends the year as the starting quarterback. I think it's Kyle Trask.
Yeah, I'm with you as well. I think Trask should be the starter, but let me ask you this, a deeper question in terms of this. This team is not built for a rebuild right now. I mean, with Godwin and Evans, this team is built technically to win games now. They can't regress and start back to zero and have Trask at the end of the year start them earlier.
It's a great point, Joe. I don't really know what the future looks like in Tampa Bay. I'm not sure Todd Bowles is going to be the head coach at the end of this year. And the odds say it right there, 6.5. The under has the juice. Not much is expected out of the Buccaneers anyway. More on Football Full Circle. Some college football talk next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We are back live right here on FFC. Joe Lisi, the latest round of realignment continues to move on. And Lisi Guy, yesterday, in a time of realignment where not a ton makes sense at this moment, yesterday's updated report might be the one that leaves you scratching your head the most. Of course, the pack, whatever, is left with just four teams that don't really have a home starting in 2024. Cal, Oregon State, Stanford, and Washington State. There was a report from ESPN's Pete Thamel yesterday, Joe Lisi, that the ACC was beginning exploratory conversations to see if the idea of adding Cal and Stanford made sense for the conference overall. That would mean the Atlantic Coast Conference is trying to add, potentially, Joe, Cal and Stanford, two teams from Northern California on the Pacific Coast. Now, I know you might say, Ben, the Big Ten's going to have 18 teams in 2024, and they're still calling themselves the Big Ten. What does it matter? The Big 12 will have 16 teams, and they're still calling themselves the Big 12. What does the name matter? But, Joe, just in terms of the logistics around adding Cal and Stanford to the ACC, whose current westernmost school is Louisville, it just seems to be one that is really, really off-putting at this point.
Does it even help the conference at this point? Does it help it in any way? It's helping out more Cal and Stanford for affiliating them with the potential conference and saving them than rather helping the ACC and the remaining teams in there. From travel perspective, it's a nightmare for everybody involved, and it makes absolutely no sense how these two teams want to attach themselves to the ACC. I don't know. At the end of the day, I think that Cal, Stanford, they should go to the potential Mountain West if that's where the Mountain West would like to have them. That makes the most sense. Trying to go as far east to just align themselves with a potential Power 5 just doesn't help their programs in any capacity, Ben. And it certainly doesn't bring more name recognition to the ACC. It's not going to help the football or basketball perspective because Cal and Stanford are now in the conference.
Absolutely so. So that's the idea, Joe, right? Oregon and Washington joining the Big Ten. USC and UCLA, being the home of Los Angeles, has the same logistical travel issues for the Big Ten as adding Cal and Stanford would for the ACC. That doesn't change. There's not the issue with the Big Ten and not the issues in the ACC and so on and so forth. But the idea, Joe, being, do the logistical travel hiccups that the ACC and all of these conferences now are going to experience with realignment, does adding Cal and Stanford from a monetary perspective actually make a damn bit of difference for the conference? The one thing the ACC has negotiated in its very long-standing TV and grant of rights deal with ESPN that runs through the 2035-36 college sports seasons is that if the conference were to add those new member institutions could be pro rata, which what does that mean? If you add in a new school, it could see a couple of extra millions of dollars perhaps for the overall conference TV rights deal and that annual average value. Do Cal and Stanford move the needle, Joe, by a couple million dollars? I don't think so. So what is the benefit then to the ACC? Because TV revenue is the reason for realignment. The prestigious academic institutions of Cal and Stanford, great, but when it comes to TV money, Joe, that means absolutely nothing. And if the issue in the ACC, Joe, is trying to get some extra shekels so you can keep Clemson, Florida State, Miami, etc. entertained and not have them depart to another conference, I'm not sure Cal and Stanford make that much of a difference to make the bottom dollar for Florida State or Miami or Clemson or Virginia all that much better.
No, think of it this way, in terms of our fans knocking down the door to potentially see Oregon and Penn State, whether it be a home and home, absolutely. Are fans going to knock down the door if Florida State takes on Cal in Tallahassee? Yeah, you might get half a crowd for that matchup. Nobody, I'm telling you, the national fan, the average fan, not the crazy college fans that we are, right, in terms of loving the sport, but nobody's going to run out to the stadium because Cal and Stanford are coming through that door. It's just unfortunate. They don't move the needle that much. The other four do, USC, UCLA, Oregon, and Washington, but not Cal. I would rather have Wazoo and Oregon State from a football perspective, even a basketball perspective, over those two programs right now.
It's really interesting, right? Because basketball is a contribution of this. Every sport is affected by these conference realignment rumors and reports and what is going to happen. But the basketball money pales in comparison to the college football money, which obviously is the winner of the day when it comes to any of these logistical challenges a conference faces. Yes, the Big Ten schedule makers now have to throw away everything they did in terms of the flex model for 2024 and 25 with the additions of Oregon and Washington, and it is going to cause some sleepless nights and some headaches, but they're going to look at the $1 billion a year their conference gets from Fox, CBS, and NBC, and the money will make those sleepless nights a little bit easier to digest. But if the money is not there for Cal and Stanford, Joe, then the logistical headaches certainly aren't there either. Now, the ACC's presidents did hold a meeting on this yesterday, and by reports from The Athletic's Nicole Auerbach and ESPN's Pete Thamel, no vote, as expected, was undertaken. They're still starting to explore the ideas of adding Cal in Stanford. The AAC, Joe, the American, made their intentions clear of adding any of the four remaining Pac whatever teams. That includes Oregon State and Washington State to this conversation. I don't know if that makes sense from a logistical standpoint either, but the American at least is trying to add some premier programs from a football perspective.
Yeah, I mean, the American has been competitive even before the four left for the Big 12 this year. You know, you had a team in Cincinnati that made, obviously, the college football playoff. So there is the opportunity to grow your brand. Again, you know, if they take two or they take four, I think the American makes sense in that regard because they can increase visibility. It makes sense for the AAC as opposed to the ACC trying to solidify Cal and Stanford. You know, you look at the AAC, and you look at the Mountain West, and obviously they have to say, okay, if we take two or four of these teams on, does it increase our national brand? Does it increase revenue? And does it increase sponsorship potential? And it does for both of those conferences. So, again, yeah. I think it makes sense for the AAC. If I'm them, I'm looking to obtain all four because you don't want to just take two. That synergistically just doesn't make sense along with logistically as well. You would rather add four, and at least you get two games out of it a weekend as opposed to just one.
Yeah, it would be really interesting to see how that plays out for the American, if it even comes to that, Joe. But who knows? Who knows what happens to the misfits, if you will? Cal and Stanford in the pack, whatever. If they do join the ACC, it would seem there's a natural fit for Oregon State and Washington State in the Mountain West. What's going to be an interesting conversation from this, Joe, is what the athletic department now has to do in terms of a reevaluation of their overall budget. They've been operating with $30 million in terms of a conference payout from the Pac-12's current TV deal. If Oregon State and Washington State end up going to the Mountain West, they're not making near $30 million. They're making probably $2 to $3 million on an annual average basis from the Mountain West TV deal. And what that media contract looks like. So that's the big difference here, Joe. That's the big change into how this conference realignment, not only which is driven, of course, by college football, but impacts every other sport. And for Cal and Stanford, if they were going to join the ACC, they would see the $30 to $31 million perhaps that the ACC pays out their member institutions currently, although they're probably getting Cal and Stanford at a discount and not a full share like the rest of the member institutions in the conference. But it's trying to, I think, Joe, for those specific athletic departments, trying to lessen some of the blow that the Pac-12's disintegration will lead for these college teams.
Yeah, you have to obviously mitigate risk, right? That's what you have to do. You have to mitigate the downside and maximize the upside in terms of potential revenue and sponsorships. And again, you know, there's two ways to look at this. You know, Power Five athletes came to a potential school to pay a specific type of schedule to showcase their talent. Now, if they attach themselves, let's just say Cal and Stanford to the ACC, even on a basketball perspective, the talent pool now is much greater than maybe it was in the Pac-12. The other factor, too, is if all four teams potentially either go to the Mountain West or potentially the American Athletic, maybe there's the potential to dominate both of those conferences, getting automatic bids and maybe potentially, you know, maximizing revenue should they get into the tournament and or make a deep run.
Yeah, absolutely so. There's a lot that goes into these conversations at this moment, and we'll continue to get more realignment rumors and reports, Joe, I would say today, tomorrow, until college football starts in just over 2 weeks. That is what we have to look forward to. And thankfully, Lisey Guy, there was the coaches poll yesterday that will pale in comparison to the AP preseason poll on Monday next week around noon Eastern time, and we can start to evaluate and forecast a specific college football season that is coming up in 2023. In fact, Lisey, until we get any more confirmed conference realignment reports, Let's go to the odds for next year and focus on the final year of normalcy, at least what we've come to know over the last decade plus in this sport in 2023. I'm having some conversations, Lisi, right now with Kevin Walsh, our guy on CFT, as we speak, as to how he sees the Big Ten playing out in 2023. We'll talk about it all next here on Football Full Circle.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
Joe Lisi is the mastermind of the college football pigskin, and I often think Joe Lisi does a great job of compartmentalizing things when it comes to the future of college football, because Joe Lisi is a man that likes to focus on the here and now, the present, and the actual game breakdowns of the action we will see on a gridiron in front of our eyes in just about 2.5 weeks, Lisi guy. And I do think that bears repeating, Joe. We're 2.5 weeks away from a college football season, so with all the changes that we are seeing in collegiate athletics, regardless of how we feel about them and the uncertain future for college sports as a whole, changing geographic rivalries in the landscape we have come to know, we have one more year of what we have known for the last decade plus, and in many cases, Joe, much longer than that. College football is 2.5 weeks away. So, Lisi, let's look at some of the action for college football starting in 2023. Lisi, do you think that this final year of normalcy, that the Pac-12 will exist with all the talent we highlighted yesterday, five teams in the top 20 of the coaches poll, the most of any conference in all of the country. Georgia looking for its repeat as a three-time national champion. The Big Ten before it expands to 18 teams. The Big 12 with OU and Texas in it for one final year. Joe, do you think any of the changes in the future on the forecast will change how you think this season plays out in 2023?
No, it has no bearing in terms of this year's play. I will say this, though, as the season progresses, and if a team, let's just say, is headed in the wrong direction, and I'll just throw Texas A&M out there, how do their head coaches handle the media? I doubt you'll see Dabo Swinney talking about, you know, expansion or Cal and Stanford week number 8 of the ACC schedule when they square off against NC State or another conference opponent. I mean, it just, you have to be dialed into the season. And it's great to talk about pre-kick. It's another thing. Once the season starts, you get all of the negativity and get all the minutiae out of the way and focus on your week-to-week opponent. I will say this about the Pac-12. I do feel this is their best opportunity to potentially knock down that college football playoff door since 2016, like we discussed the other day. Washington has been the last team to get to the college football playoff. I think they have a handful of teams that potentially do it. Which one's going to be the last man standing? Because they all are led by potential Heisman Trophy quarterbacks that can lead their team to potentially an undefeated season.
Lisi, in my mind, no doubt the best chance for the Pac-12 to get back to the party that is the college football playoff for the first time since 2016. In fact, Joe, 9-year history of the college football playoff, four teams that qualify for the CFP each and every year. That's a total of 36 available spots. How many has the Pac-12 occupied in its time? Just two. Oregon the first year, 2014. Washington in 2016, and none since then. It could be a part of the reason the Pac-12 faces the dilemma it does in its future, because one final point of not realignment but the changes of 2024, Joe, if the college football playoff, and now it's a rather big if the college football playoff does expand to 12 teams in 2024, there is expected to be at the end of this TV rights deal with ESPN through 2026 a renegotiation of the contract to add in multiple TV networks for the far more college football playoff games that we will have under a 12-team model. And that means bigger money and payouts for the teams that get to the CFP. But, Lisa Guy, when you look at what it stands like this year for USC, 16-1, the price for the Trojans to win a national championship, the fifth best number, plus 250, Joe, to reach the college football playoff. What is interesting, Lisa, as we look at the coaches poll, LSU checked in at 5. LSU has the fifth best price to win a national championship at 12-1, but the Tigers, Joe, to reach the college football playoff actually have the ninth best number, actually tied for the eighth best number alongside the team they open up the season with. That's plus 380 alongside Florida State. It's going to be the reason, Joe, because the SEC, even getting to the SEC title game as Brian Kelly and the Bayou Bengals did a season ago, is a much more difficult path than per se the ACC or the Pac-12, where if you win your conference and you only have one loss and you do so in a weaker league than that of the SEC, you have a much brighter outlook in terms of making the college football playoff.
And was last year an outlier, or is it a change in trend? And what I mean by that is, obviously, Alabama didn't win the West, didn't get to the college football playoff. It was LSU. And is it going to be a changing of the guard under Brian Kelly in year number two? Is that consistency going to be there from last year, and is it going to progress and elevate to now a college football playoff berth? Right now, the book is telling you we still give the inside track to Alabama, but, you know, we talked about it. The top four teams, Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, and obviously Alabama, they all have question marks, whether it be the offense and quarterback position or whether it be the defensive side of the ball. And at the end of the day, that will ultimately dictate whether all four of these teams make the college football playoff this year. LSU on paper potentially has one of the most explosive offenses in the conference. Can the defense take the next step? The schedule is favorable, but they obviously have to knock off Alabama and Tuscaloosa, and that's the hardest concern because the Crimson Tide have only lost one game since 2016.
Absolutely so. Alabama has made the SEC title 6 of the 9 years in the college football playoff era. Every time that Alabama has made the SEC championship game, they have won the SEC title game. And Joe, there was a little bit of a fight that broke out yesterday during fall camp for LSU during 11-on-11. Punches thrown, guys taken off the field. Malik Nabers, Kyron Lacy got sent to the locker room. Harold Perkins, who was maybe the best defender in the sport last year as only a freshman, did not play another snap. And Brian Kelly, as reports indicate, Joe, did not seem all that pleased. Now, some people overreact to the heat of summer and fall camp and getting ready for 2023. I think it's fair to say these players probably overreacted in whatever brawl played out yesterday. But for me, Lisi, I love seeing those reports. It means that football is close. It means the intensity is high. It has to be contained intensity. And I think that was probably why Brian Kelly was so miffed yesterday. But in the wake of realignment in the last 2 to 3 weeks that has dominated the conversation, to see fall camp reports, Lisi, just makes me incredibly happy.
Yeah, and if you're Brian Kelly, you want to see, obviously, you know, guys and the team get a little fiery and intense, right? Especially now. That means technically they're dialed in. They're competing. They want to win at every level. Now, you don't want to see anybody get hurt, especially a star player like Harold Perkins. As long as everybody's okay, I think Brian Kelly, even though he said he was very displeased, he'll take that in early August. Obviously, as we inch closer to that week one matchup against Florida State, you don't want to see that happen. But early on, as they get back into camp, I think it's a positive for the LSU Tigers.
What are we doing Labor Day weekend Sunday night, Lisi? Me, you, where are we watching Florida State LSU?
You tell me. I mean, it's going to be maybe Sintrata? We go down the beach. Let's go down the beach and watch it. Labor Day weekend, nothing better, baby.
Nothing better than that. Joe Lisi is spot on right there. And we'll be live on College Football Today for what will be our second show of the year on September 2nd. That Saturday of Labor Day weekend, the first full Saturday of the college football season. Lisi, I think we brought up the point about Notre Dame yesterday, right? Checking in at number 13 in the preseason coaches poll. Notre Dame right now, from their perspective, to win a national championship, a relatively long number by Notre Dame standards. But when you think about the Irish this year, there is a potential, of course, as always, to be a college football playoff team. 30-1 is that price on Notre Dame. What do you think the realistic ceiling, Joe, is for Marcus Freeman in year number two, having Sam Hartman as his starting quarterback?
I think they could be a dark horse at plus 750 to make the college football playoff. I really believe that, and I'm buying in to Sam Hartman as a potential dark horse at 18-1 to challenge Caleb Williams for the Heisman. I'll say that. You know, from a schedule perspective, they have what it takes. They play Clemson. They obviously play USC. They have three top 10 opponents. Ohio State's on there in their house. So if they can get two of those three wins, Ben, and as you know, if they lose a third, let's say very close, they're going to be there in the end. I mean, especially if they dominate and let's just say win one of those games by double digits. So I think they got their feet wet. They got the growing pains out last year with Marcus Freeman. You got to say coming to South Bend is not easy for both Caleb Williams and Kyle McCord. I mean, that could be a Lions' den, a hornet's nest for the Notre Dame. They could potentially step up and maybe be an 11 or 12-0 football team this year.
It is a very difficult schedule when you are an independent team. And Notre Dame has looked at conference realignment in the last few weeks and said, we're good. We'll focus on what we have ahead of us. But Notre Dame's schedule, Joe, like you mentioned, Ohio State at home, USC at home, their toughest test on the road at Death Valley against the Clemson Tigers, the opening Saturday of November. Maybe not their toughest test, but at least in terms of those three games that will decide their season overall, Joe, if they are a college football playoff team or not, being on the road in Death Valley, where Clemson has been dominant at home under Dabo Sweeney over the last 7-8 years, is a very, very difficult test. Now, with that being said, Joe, if they were to take advantage, Notre Dame is, of winning both of their home games against Ohio State and USC, not only could they afford then a loss at Clemson to be a one-loss independent team, but that would cause shockwaves for both the Buckeyes and Trojans college football playoff hopes. You would then assume, Joe, as we have never seen a two-loss team make the college football playoff in its now 9-year history, the Buckeyes would have to be perfect in Big Ten play. That's a difficult thing. The Trojans would have to be perfect in Pac-12 play, knowing how deep that conference is this year, also highly difficult. Notre Dame, Joe, as we're talking about this right here, could be the very X factor that decides what the college football playoff looks like this year in 2023.
It can, and you mentioned that road game against Clemson. I mean, Sam Hartman has played there before, so he's familiar with that type of landscape. And you talk about the USC game. Notre Dame has won the last four meetings in South Bend. So, you know, the trends are sort of going in their direction. And let's not forget, you know, what is the Achilles heel of Ohio State in back-to-back losses to Michigan? The rushing attack, Audric Estime and that heavy offensive line. Maybe they don't need Sam Hartman. Maybe they try to run it down Ohio State's throat as an 8.5-point underdog in South Bend. So there's a number of factors. Again, the fact that Marcus Freeman started off slow and the team progressed and elevated better at the end of the regular season, evident with that bowl win over Spencer Rattler, you got to say the biggest trajectory is from year one to year two. I think they're poised for a breakout season.
Jared Parker got the promotion to the offensive coordinator role. He served as the tight ends coach under Marcus Freeman a season ago, of course, after Tommy Rees departed to Tuscaloosa. Now, I mentioned it, Leesy guy. Our guy, old K-Dubs, even though he is off this week from hosting the early line and the money line that will start after us in just a few minutes here on Sports Grid Radio, is diving deep through Big Ten research. He has a plausible scenario, Joe, that we talked about atop the Big Ten East, where the three frontrunners, the three powerhouses, Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State, might be the only loss for the other in conference play. But one thing he shared with me, Joe, he loves the Wisconsin Badgers in the Big Ten in 2023. We will talk about that up next, live right here on Football Full Circle, before we depart for the day. Stay tuned here on FFC.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
You're listening to Football Full Circle with Joe Lisi and Ben Stevens.
We are live right here on FFC. It is Football Full Circle on the Sports Grid Radio Network. Just a few more minutes left, Joe. We're looking at actual football that we expect to be played in 2023 and how this season might go. No more conference realignment talk for the next few minutes. And, Joe, I mentioned our guy, old K-Dubs, Kevin Walsh, already in the lab despite having a few off days from the grid and getting his Big Ten research ready. He told me, Joe, his biggest takeaway was that the Wisconsin Badgers have supreme value at plus 850 to win the Big Ten. He believes in Phil Longo. The acquisition as the new offensive coordinator in Madison under first-year head coach Luke Fickell and the evolution the Badgers can take offensively. Lisey, what say you?
Well, again, I think Luke Fickell's the right guy, but I don't think it's going to happen in year one. And we're talking about, obviously, the front runners for the Big Ten West. I think on paper it seems good, but at the end of the day, the transition of the offensive line, it's the same thing that happened with Arkansas. There's going to be growing pains. And I think they're maybe 7-5, 8-4 at best. I'm picking Nebraska to win that half of the division this year.
I know you like the Nebraska Cornhuskers in the Big Ten West, so Lisey, allow me to fire you up perhaps. Day number 3 or 4 of fall camp, I believe it is for the Huskers today in Lincoln. And guess what Matt Rhule put on display for some of the media to see in the open session? The traditional 22 formation. That means two tight ends, two running backs, but
love
not
it,
just two
I
running
love
backs.
It.
A running back and a fullback, Lisey guy,
love
returns
it
to the field in Lincoln, Nebraska.
That is Joe Makavica. Let's go back, Tom Rathman. Let's go, baby.
Going back. Frank Solich,
you,
the original fullback in Lincoln, Nebraska. Frank Solich, who came to the spring game, Joe. The curse of Solich is over. Nebraska has a winning season for the first time since 2016 in 2023. You see how excited we get talking a little fullback in college football? That does it for us today. The Moneyline, though, up next.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take 5 before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNCs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.